Hey again, everyone. It's BitNote with David Collins. We'll be playing video game music and talking about the games they're from. Hope you enjoy. So, let's start off with some music from a really classic game, Street Fighter 2. So what you heard there was the classic intro logomatic for Capcom, and then the theme from the SNES version of Street Fighter 2. Street Fighter 2, boy, developed by Capcom, it is certainly probably one of the games that defined the fighting genre of the time. For those of you who don't know Street Fighter 2, it's fairly simple. You have two people on the screen. They fight each other. That's pretty much it. I remember Street Fighter 2 was always just a lot of fun because it was just so captivating, engaging. All of the characters were kind of exaggerated and had their own styles to them, and the backgrounds were always vivid and took place in a variety of different locations. It was always just a delight to see the characters, the animation, the fight moves, all the different locations. And, I mean, this was a massive hit back then. This was something that, you know, arcades were, like, full of these Street Fighter games. There were Street Fighter tournaments, of course, well, not unusual for any sort of arcade game. I remember seeing some TV show in the early 90s say, we've created this, like, I don't know, £50 controller that's specifically just for Street Fighter games, where you could like pull off special moves by pressing a button. And oh boy, I mean, special moves were what it was at. I mean, the game basically, you know, you'd control one character, you control the other. There'd be a couple of, you know, buttons for like punching and stuff, but the whole thing about it was a special move. By hitting a right combination of buttons, which was, you know, pretty still new at the time, these days it's common, it would pull off a special move, and instead of just being some cool takedown or something, it'd be something like your character would turn into a missile and just shoot across the screen, or your character would become electric. And of course the famous one, the Hadouken. This is when you just shot a beam of energy out of your hand, spun it across the screen to hit the enemies. I mean, this is a brash, fun, colourful game. It defines so many stuff. It's popped up in an episode of Father Ted, and it even had a few movies, most of which sucked. But thankfully, Jackie Chan in the movie City Hunter did like a 3-minute tribute to Street Fighter, where basically there's kind of a daydream-esque sequence where everyone's suddenly the Street Fighter characters, and it just is so awesome. And it's just, I mean, that's what I like about the games. You know, you go in, you try to learn a couple of like basic special moves, and then you just pretty much button mash. That's pretty much it. I know there are people who play this game competitively. I know there are people who like try to work out the combinations, and I know that there's a huge amount of skill at a professional level. But guys like me, I mean, we go in, we get the controller in our hand, we just try whatever damn combination, and if we can figure out like one or two special moves, we think that we have it made. We think we're these genius people. But you know, sometimes it's kind of nicer just to hit every single button in combination and hope for something good, because then when something fantastic happens, you go, whoa, that was so cool. How the heck did I even do that? And you have no clue, and then it's a surprise for the next time. And that's pretty much how all fighting games for me. But I mean, with Street Fighter 2, that's how the whole thing kind of really started. I never did quite figure out what the plot to the game was. I mean, they had all these different characters like Ken and Ryo, who were like martial arts, and Guile, who was like a US military guy. And then you had Dahal Sim, who was like a voodoo witch doctor with stretchy arms, and Blanca, who was this guy who could electrocute his body. And I always figured out, like, M. Bison was meant to be the main bad guy, and I think he killed someone's, I think Chun-Li's father. Chun-Li was the secret agent whose unusual dress sense could only be explained by her going very deep undercover. And I don't know why suddenly you were traveling all across the world battling in all these exotic locations like an airport hangar or a market stall or all this sort of stuff. But the great thing that I know is if all these diverse people with such stylish dress sense are all battling each other, then sure, there's doesn't really need to be a good reason to explain it. And maybe there is, who knows. I remember most of the plot from what some friends who were playing it in our house were telling us, and I don't know, because we managed to get to the end of the game, but we were using a cheat, so the game, instead of actually giving us the end sequence, says, "Congratulations, you've won, but remember that cheaters never prosper." I kind of got pissed at that, but anyway. And actually, it wasn't just the Jackie Chan movie, there was also an animated Japanese movie based on that video game. I don't really remember the plot either. It involved a lot of cybernetic robots that were walking around the place. I just remember the whole movie was me going, "Hey, yeah, that section there, I recognize that special move from the game," or "I recognize that character from the game," or "Oh, this is so exciting." And then there was this nice joke involving heart transplants. But that's a side issue. And it just goes to show how, like, one really famous game that captures generation can have a huge legacy by being bright, colorful, interesting, and just being a great game. Now, I can't leave you with one track. That track was just to ease you into things. But there's another... I wanted to play a different track that would really, really sum up the spirit of Street Fighter. Now, when I was going online, a lot of people... Guile's theme was popping up a lot. Guile, of course, that military guy with the blonde haircutty thing, I think, and stuff. But essentially, a lot of people... There's this internet meme or something. Internet memes are kind of like when someone says something and people repeat it, and because people repeat it, other people think it's worth repeating. So it's kind of like a celebrity that people are famous, but they're not, and they might be some merit to it, but a lot of their fame is people validating their own fame, you know what I mean? So, like, being the kind of like perverse person that I am, like anti-popular person I am, I said no, I'm not going to just play Guile's theme because a lot of people, you know, are saying it's good, or making these music videos saying it goes with their, you know, I'm going to choose a game from Street Fighter 2 that I like, that I think summarizes it up, that I really love, not just because a lot of internet people are saying this game rocks. So I thought, you know, I'll choose that game, that really rocking theme, that one that really gets me into the mood, the theme from Street Fighter that I really, really like. So I looked it up online and found out that that theme was Guile's theme. Okay, well, I guess the internet can't be wrong about everything. Here it is. That was Guile's theme from the video game Street Fighter 2, created by Capcom, and that music there was composed by Yoko Shimomura. Now, Yoko's actually quite a famous game composer. She's done work for Capcom, Square, Freelance. She's done music for Kingdom Hearts, Final Fight, Legend of Mana, and plenty of other games that I've heard so much about and really should play someday. It's kind of awkward if there's a great games composer who's played a lot of tracks and bass that I don't really have much familiar with, but I'll try to make this make this work anyway. As you can see, she's worked on a lot of classic games. She's pretty well known. A few years ago, she released a great big album covering her life works and some of the best qualities of it. And when I was looking her up, it turns out that about in 2009, there was this great concert called Sinfonia Dramatica, where a full composer orchestra were playing music based on her work and that of Chris Heuselbeck. Now, I've talked about Chris before on this show, and thankfully I have listened to some of his music with Turrican 2, probably one of my favourite themes ever, and I talked about how he made a huge funding drive and everything. But it's just, oh boy, I mean, I so would have liked to be at that concert, just to have two great composers, and I mean, like I said, I probably wouldn't have heard a lot of the tracks, but just to hear them just play, you know, the East and West sort of whole theme of the two composers, and just to get together to play some huge professionals playing quality themed music. I mean, it's kind of a bit of a pity about that. But if you want to miss out, both Chris and Yoko, all of their own albums recently released, which was basically what the concert was based upon. Chris Heuselbeck is doing all right, as well as telling you about that the funding he was doing to record Turrican 2 music. He was also involved in another funding drive for a kind of a remake of the Great Gina Sisters, or a new version of it, more to speak, which he made the music for the original game, which I never really played, and now they're making a new version of it, which seems to be doing well. So, back to Yoko. Damn, that was good music. I do love that theme. It's just, it gets you up, it's motivates you, it's focused, it's interesting. She did pretty much the whole music for that game, and she hadn't even really been familiar with fighting games before then. But no one can disagree that she did a great job with that track. Alright, time for a change of pace. Let's check something from Mopixel. Interesting theme there was the music for Mopixel. If you think you heard a fair bit of it there, it repeats itself a lot through the game. It was composed by Sost, and it was from the video game Mopixel, also by Sost. Yes, the entire game was a one-man operation. We are delving once more into the realm of indie games, and this one's got an interesting history behind it. He made a basic version of this game for Ludum Dare. That's a game jam. I'll probably talk about game jams and fair bit some other time, but essentially a game jam is where a bunch of people get together and try to make a game in the shortest amount of time possible. In this case, it was 48 hours. So the idea of these games is essentially you're thrown into a scenario. There's usually a bomb or an impending disaster. You have 20 seconds to do the right option. If you fail, which is most likely, and in some cases you're actually trying to do, you'll automatically be shifted on to another scenario, and you'll have to try to figure out that scenario. There's usually, if you fail that one, you keep going around until you go through all five levels and then loop over. If you solve one, that gets removed from the rotation, and once you've managed to, and you go through all the other four, and then when you solve one, it gets to, you keep repeating through the other three, and then once you've solved them, all of them, you get the next batch of levels, and then you start all over again. So it's kind of intensive, it's very fast paced, and essentially you've really no idea of what's going to actually solve the level in the first place. You see what's in front of you, you click around, and hopefully it works, and sometimes it doesn't. It's the game's got a very retro charm to it. I think I've talked to you a lot before about how a lot of modern video games, you know, emulate the aesthetics of old video games by having like all these electronic soundtracks and pixelated look. Well, I think you can guess from the name, like McPixel, that it's got what sort of aesthetic it goes for. And there's a huge amount of diverse scenarios. For instance, in one thing, you've got a stick of dynamite on the ground and you're in a mummy in an Egypt cavern and you don't know what to do with it. And it turns out, oh, wait a second, it's not the dynamite that was going to cause the explosion. It's actually a gigantic bomb in a hidden panel behind the wall. And your solution is to put the dynamite stick in the hidden panel to blow up the other bomb and then disarm it. Now, if it kind of sounds counterintuitive, that's kind of what the huge amount of the game is about. A lot of times you're not quite even sure how the heck what you're meant to be doing is solving a puzzle. So you just basically try every combination until it gets through, which is actually kind of a lot of fun, actually. In another case, for instance, you're on a mountain top, it's a volcano, there's a cow, there's a woman, and the volcano is about to erupt and a sign says, insert virgin. Well, of course, the obvious answer to that is just to throw yourself into it. It's got a weird sense of humor, this game. I mean, normally in most adventure... Well, I mean, it's not fully an adventure game, but in most, like, adventure games, point-and-click adventure games, if you click on someone, the default action will be to talk with them, unless there's something else going on. In this game, the default action is that you kick them in the nether regions, which shows that this game doesn't exactly have a very highbrow sense of humor, but it kind of works with the game because it's so damn unashamedly about it. I mean, the character is kind of a jerk. He's more likely to like let the bomb blow up or do something that causes the bomb to blow up as he is to actually save the day, which is actually meant to be the whole objective of the game. And if you actually get to this, finally complete all the levels, and not just that, you also have to come up and cross every single possible ending for the game by, you know, it's optional just to go through the whole game and just complete everything, but that'll just get, you won't get the ending sequence. The ending sequence, you have to get every possible combination to all the levels, and in which case you'll get a secret ending that'll give you a bit more insight into the guy's character. But long story short, he's kind of a bit of a jerk, and that's kind of how the game goes. So McPixel is fast, frantic, got an oddball sense of humor, has crazy puzzles, and starts with a warning saying that playing the game for extended periods of time could damage your brain. What more could you ask for in a video game? Well, time for another change of pace, and I think we'll move up from indie game music to something a little more, well, have a listen. All right. That was Background Music 4 from the video game Vanquish, developed by Platinum Studios. The composers for the soundtrack of that game were Arena Niwa, Masafumi Takeda, and Masazuki Sugiyama. Now, Vanquish is a fun game. It took me a bit to get into it, but then once I did, essentially the idea is that there's this colony floating around in orbit around space, and then it's obviously some great scheme to help with the overpopulation problem on Earth. But then, of course, when some Russians managed to take over, yes, we're going back to Russians being the bad guys and this sort of stuff, they realized to use the entire colony to create a more direct way of combating overpopulation by firing a microwave beam at San Francisco, which doesn't go down well with pretty much anyone involved. The United States decides to reply by sending a huge amount of battleships with a huge amount of troops to invade the colony, defeat all the robots that have suddenly been reprogrammed to attack and defend the base, and then basically just try to regain control of the base so that you can, you know, stop the guy from firing again at other countries. So, essentially, very standard thing. A big evil guy's got the world hostage, and you got to go in and with a bunch of people and sort it out. Fortunately, DARPA has your back. They've decided that, despite with all their regular military spending, they've decided to make a really powerful, ultra-powered suit of armor that can manage to store weapons weightlessly and take up damage and accelerate your metabolism for short periods of time, causing slow motion, and of course be able to slide around in your butt for a huge amount of the game. The sliding around in your butt is actually a very nice mechanism. It's like with a lot of games, it's like cover-based shooters, so you hide behind something, jump out, shoot them, crouch back down again. But no, in this game, not only can you do that, you can jump over, then slide on your butt using rocket boosters to slide right across the ground all the way around, try to flank your enemies and shoot them from the side. It's a fun way of actually keeping the game moving pretty quickly, because it's, you know, force you to be aggressive, you know, move the fight to them and everything. And it's just a lot of fun. It's just zipping around there, trying to make sure that you don't use up too much power and you don't overheat, and just blasting away at the thing at the time. And the plot's kind of corny, and the lines are kind of lighthearted and stuff. And then there's this old, and you're like this, you know, smart ass young guy in this super powered suit, and you're dealing with this old gruntled war veteran who's kind of moving his troops around. And then, of course, you know, it doesn't always quite work out that well, but you know, it's a fun game, and the combat keeps pretty fluid, and you got a bunch of really cool weapons which they can also be upgraded in various ways. It's the upgrade system, it's actually kind of clever. Normally speaking, if your weapon is at full ammo, you know, completely filled, and you find another weapon of the same type, then by collecting that weapon, you upgrade your weapon. So it's like not firing bullets and being careful with your ammo means your weapons become more powerful. It's kind of a nice system. And the game Vanquish was released a few years ago. Unfortunately, it didn't take off. It didn't get as many sales as it should have. Platinum Studios were previously Clover Studios. They made a lot of great games, everything from Okami to God Hand to Bayonetta. So it's like, it's kind of a pity that all these people to put a lot of effort into a game that's pretty damn good, but just wasn't marketed. Just people didn't buy it. I think people have their own interpretation. Some reviewers said it was the lack of multiplayer. I personally just think it was the same problem that so many great games don't get the attention. It wasn't marketed. I basically didn't even start hearing about this game until people were doing stuff like, you know, oh, games you mightn't have heard of but are definitely really good. So that's the lesson here. No matter how good your game is, market it. There are one or two shining exceptions where a game can be so good and get the right breaks that it can be successful even without marketing, but these is the exceptions, not the rules. So, highly recommended. It's Vanquish is on PS3 and Xbox 360. I think it's available as a downloadable title. So, if you're interested, go for it. And as for me, well, I'm afraid we're going to reach the end of our show. I'll finish off on the conclusion track from Vanquished. And in the meantime, like I said, you can listen to us online, doublesouthfm.ie. And we've also got Twitter at BitNoteFM. So thank you for listening, and hope you have a good day.